Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mealer here. Happy to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today is Brian Huddleston, the director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. He resides in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. So we'll talk with him about some of the diseases he's been seeing in his lab and talking about preventing plant diseases to begin with. So, question for Brian. I hope you'll give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Again, the number 800-642-1234. Brian Huddleston, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry. How are you?
Well, I'm actually in pretty good shape for a Friday, and and happy to have the chance to talk with you. You know, once you get a disease in your garden, it can be pretty hard to get rid of it. What are some good ways to prevent the diseases from entering in the first place?
Yeah, probably the best thing to do is to think about diseases in the fall. As you're doing fall cleanup, a lot of disease-causing organisms survive in old plant debris, so leaves coming off of trees, those branches and leaves from your herbaceous plants, those are all great places for disease-causing organisms to hang out. So if you collect up that material in the fall, or if you want to wait until the spring before things leaf out, you can certainly collect it up then. Get it out of your yard, and quite frankly, with a lot of the material, if you're a good hot composter, you can compost that material. Otherwise, get it to your municipal lawn care or your municipal a drop-off site where they take yard waste.
What about picking out healthy plants? You know, when it comes to buying,
definitely
I buy
starting
a lot
out
of plants.
With healthy materials is very important. Not only plants, if you're buying transplants, but also when you're buying seed, you definitely need to make sure you're buying seed from a high-quality source. And because you can bring in certain disease-causing organisms on the seed, but definitely when you're buying transplants, inspect those plants for any odd looks to the plants, whether they have spots or weird colors or distorted leaf growth. Any of those types of symptoms could potentially indicate a disease problem, and you want to avoid those plants. So definitely let the person who's selling the plants know if you see something that's odd, because they typically want to know about that thing, that sort of thing, to prevent spread.
And anthracnose, what does it look like?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of different anthracnose diseases. We primarily, at this point in this year, have been seeing it on tree species, particularly maples. You tend to get kind of an irregular dead blotch on the leaf. It can be pretty much anywhere on the leaf surface, but that tissue will be dead. It usually doesn't cause a significant amount of damage. On certain types of trees, things like white oaks, if it occurs early enough in the season, it might cause some defoliation. But the trees typically have a second set of buds that will sprout and produce new leaves after the anthracnose causes the first set to drop off. So oftentimes by midsummer, when it's a little bit drier, if you've had anthracnose early in the season, you won't even know that it had occurred if you have something like a white oak. But there, these are, again, diseases where if you do good fall cleanup, oftentimes you can control them relatively well that way.
Evelyn in Milwaukee has a question about her maple tree, so maybe we should go to Evelyn. Evelyn, hi,
sure.
Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, this might be an example of that. I don't know. This maple tree is about 5 years old, I'm guessing, and it's not a Norway and it's not a sugar, but I couldn't tell you exactly the species, but it has right now kind of smaller leaves. Some maples have huge leaves, but this has smaller leaves. And the edges, you can't even tell this until you get up close to the tree, but the edges are turning brown. Very tiny little border around the edge, and occasionally in the interior of the leaf. And I don't have a clue what's the matter with it.
Yeah, if you think the leaves are smaller than normal and then you're also getting this kind of marginal browning to the leaves, it's usually an indication to me that the tree is under water stress and nutrient stress. The marginal browning particularly is an indication to me of some sort of water stress in the tree. And that can be from a variety of things. In certain areas of the state, they haven't had a lot of rain, so it could be from just a lack of rain. If you've had plenty of rain in your area, or this has been a problem that's been ongoing for a long period of time, it could be an indication of something going on down lower in the tree in the root system or around the root collar, so that area around the soil line. And one of the big problems we tend to see with maples, one, are sometimes planting issues where they're planted a little bit too deeply. So one of the things you should look for in your tree is whether it has a root flare. So that's where the trunk widens to form the root system. If you don't see that, if your tree looks like a telephone pole as it goes into the ground, that's an indication that it was planted a bit too deeply. And then other things that I always ask people about is if they planted the tree themselves, was it bald and burlapped? That's a typical way that trees are brought in from a nursery, and we typically recommend to remove that burlap. There should be a wire basket underneath that should be removed as well. And then if there are any wires or strings or anything of that sort attached to the trunk, those need to be removed. If you plant a tree too deeply, the reason to remove all those materials is they can interfere with proper root growth. And if you plant too deeply, particularly with maples, you run the risk of getting what are called girdling roots. These are roots that instead of growing outward from the trunk, grow around the trunk. And then eventually as the tree trunk gets bigger in diameter, it'll come into contact with those roots. That'll cause a constriction in the water conducting tissue under the bark and the trunk, and that'll limit water flow up into the upper branches and also nutrient flow as well.
So take a look at that. There's a lot of things to look at there, but I'd certainly take a look at that root flare to see if there's any kind of flare, because I see that so often, and it makes me sick.
I've been doing a lot of, because of COVID-19, I've been doing a lot of digital diagnostics instead of getting live samples in the clinic, because I'm kind of limited in terms of the number of hours I can be in my lab at this point. And I'm getting a lot of pictures that I don't normally get of trees, and I can't tell you how many situations there are where I can see it may not be the only thing wrong with the tree, but there are a lot of trees that have planting issues. They've been planted too deeply. I've had some examples where I've had the clients dig around at the base of the tree in the wire baskets or the burlap have been left on. So proper planting is really critical to have your landscape trees survive for an extended period of time.
So there you go, Evelyn. Hopefully things will work out for you. But take a look. You might even want to get an arborist to take a look at the tree.
Yes, that would be a good idea. I'd go for a certified arborist, and if you just look up the Wisconsin Arborist Association online, it's actually www.waa-isa.org, and there you'll get a list of certified arborists, and you can search based on where they work in the state.
Yeah, there you go, Evelyn. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Janet in Sparta, it's your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about my ginkgo tree. I purchased it from a local garden center last May and planted it the same day. And we had a lot of water last year, about an inch a week. Anyway, towards the end of the season, the leaves turned yellow and suddenly started to fall all at once. And I wasn't sure if this was something normal, but I compared it to some other ginkgo trees in the city, and they still had their leaves on them. It did not bud out this summer, although it sent up some shoots from the bottom, and now those leaves are turning brown. The garden center is not particularly interested in helping me. I think I'm on my own on this one, so I'm wondering, do you think this might have been insects, disease? Do you have any idea on what it might be?
Yeah, if something fails that quickly after transplant, it's oftentimes a transplant shock. It could be that the tree was not a high-quality tree. Unfortunately, that can be a problem as well. If it were a disease problem, I would expect it to progress more slowly. Again, I think if it's an insect problem, again, I wouldn't expect that kind of collapse in it not to survive the winter. How much were you watering it?
Well, in the beginning, we watered it quite a bit, but then since we got about an inch a week last summer, I didn't, let the rain do the work.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. The next time when you plant, try to target about 2 inches maybe of water per week for a new transplant, and you'll probably have to do that for several years. They tend to require a little bit more water than an established tree. An inch of water per week for an established tree is a really nice amount, but the transplants need a little bit more. But we did have a lot of rain last year, so I don't necessarily think that that is totally the issue. Was it bald and burlapped?
No, it was in a plastic container.
Okay, what do the roots look like when you remove that from the pot? Were they all kind of gnarled up? And?
Ooh, I can't remember. Was last year.
Another thing to consider, and again, I don't know if this is what is going on. Sometimes we have some issues with potted plants that if the soil that the plant is in that pot is radically different from the soil, your native soil in your yard, the root systems won't try to grow out from that original pot shape. And one of the things you might want to do is, it sounds like the tree is not savable. So I would dig it up carefully and look to see if any of the roots look like they started to grow out or whether they just kind of, you can still see kind of the outline of the pot from last year. Because I have had some problems with that occurring. And then if you think you're giving the tree a lot of water, but because it's got such a restricted root space, it's in a very concentrated area, it just doesn't take up a lot of water. If you want to go with a tree again, you might want to consider a bare root tree. Those are ones I think that transplant sometimes a little bit better. And you can also, if the roots are kind of in a weird orientation, you can actually straighten them out, make sure they're growing away from the tree. So mm-hmm. I would try a bare root tree rather than a potted tree.
All good tips. Jana, thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, with your plant question. Plant diseases is our emphasis today on the show with Brian Huddleston. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Richard in Middleton, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Richard. Richard, are you there? Maybe we lost Rich.
Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. There you go. Huh? Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, can you, I just wanted to offer, if you could offer your expertise on what's going on with spruce trees in southern Wisconsin and their bottom-up dying that's going on. And then we've got a tart cherry tree, and every year it has leaf drop and the immature fruit drops off of it. And I'll hang up and listen on the radio.
Hold on, Richard. I'm going to have some questions for you about the cherry. Let's talk about the spruce first. You mentioned kind of bottom-up dieback, and it's probably losing needles from the interior of the tree out towards the tips. It's very typical of a fungal disease called Rhizosphera needle cast. And if you're interested in reading up more about this, I have a website. I'll give this out, pddc.wisc.edu. And we have a fact sheet section. There is a fact sheet on this. It's a fungal disease, very common in a variety of different types of spruce, particularly blue spruce. And then we're seeing more and more problems with white spruce nowadays as well. And the fungus apparently infects newer needles right as they're emerging in the spring. Doesn't do a lot at that point, but as the needles age and end up farther back along the branch, then the fungus tends to kind of activate and it causes a premature needle drop from the branches. There's not a lot to do about that other than not to plant these spruces that are really susceptible to the disease. Once you see a lot of the disease, it's kind of difficult to deal with other than as the trees get aesthetically displeasing, prune out those branches that are really thin to make the tree look a little neater, a little prettier. There are technically fungicide treatments for managing the disease, but you have to start those very, very early when the tree is very young. They need to be done every year. There are usually multiple applications that you have to make. And quite frankly, as the trees get larger,
sounds like a pain.
It's a pain, and you have to cover the entire tree really, really well. So I don't normally recommend those. They are an option. But I think planning ahead, if you've got a tree that looks kind of ragged, and planting something new to replace it eventually. Now, with a cherry, when you said it was losing leaves, did you see any indication of spotting on the leaves before they dropped?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tiny spots, yeah.
Yeah, very small. It's probably a disease called cherry leaf spot, very, very common on cherries, and I've seen a lot of it last summer. I haven't seen any this year, but I saw quite a bit last summer. Probably the most common fungal leaf disease that I see on cherries. And this is an edible cherry or is it ornamental?
It's a Montmorency variety, edible.
Yeah,
we're hoping to have it edible, yeah.
Yeah, so you're trying to get cherries off of it. Then what you really need to do is get one of the fruit sprays with something like Captan in it. And, okay. And there are other active ingredients, but that's a relatively good one. It's got a broad spectrum, and you'll need to start applying that early, probably as soon as the leaves start to come out. Follow the label directions in terms of timing. It'll probably be anywhere from roughly a week to 14 days, depending upon the product that you buy. That'll all be on the label. And again, you need to get good coverage of the leaves, both lower and upper surface of the leaves. That's critical for these fungicides to be effective. And then good fall cleanup of the leaf litter, quite frankly. That's where the fungus overwinters. So, but you'll probably, it sounds like you have a really susceptible variety, so you'll need to probably, if you want to get fruit, use fungicides. Now, you mentioned the fruits weren't doing very well either. What are you seeing on the fruits?
They'll all start, and hey, we'll get awesome potential there, and then they're looking at some of them might have a spot, some of them just dry up and fall off.
Yeah, do they look kind of fuzzy and buff colored by any chance?
No, they do not.
Okay. There is a disease that fungal disease called brown rot that's very typical on cherries, but that'll usually cause the fruits to mummify, and then they'll have kind of a fuzzy buff colored sporulation on the surface. It could be just that because the leaves are dropping so severely, the trees are just aborting the fruits. Could be you have some insect activity that's causing some issues as well. There are a variety of things that can cause fruit to drop. But I would trying to deal with the leaf issues that you're dealing with, and then hopefully you'll get some fruit from there.
All right.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call. Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at plant diseases on Garden Talk today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Brian Huddleston, director of the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Lots of callers online, some good emails with photos. Brian, if you can see the photo from Pauline in Port Washington that she emailed us. She has 5 viburnum bushes that were planted a couple of years ago, about 4 feet high, did well last year. This spring she noticed that the leaves have a lot of holes and look like lace. She doesn't see any bugs under the leaves. One plant is rapidly dying. How can she save the other 4?
I think this is a question for our friend P.J. Leash, who's our insect diagnostician on campus. There is an insect called viburnum, I believe it's leaf beetle, where the larvae will cause a lot of defoliation, and it's been rampant this spring, from what I understand from P.J. So this would be a situation where I would email this photo to P.J. His email is P.Leash, P-L-I-E-S. ch@wisc.edu, and he can give you the lowdown. We also have a fact sheet on that particular insect, if I'm right in the identification. Again, it's on my clinic website in the fact sheet section that was authored by PJ not too long ago, about a year and a half ago.
Let's take another call. Devin in Monona, your turn. Hi, Devin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about an apple tree that we planted a few years ago. It looks this year like we have rust. All the leaves are colored with like a yellowy orange spot.
Okay.
And it did fruit, but I don't know what to do. I think from what I read, I probably should give up on the fruit this year, but what should I do to make sure, you know, I clean it up well, and how can I prevent it next year?
Yeah, so is all you're seeing the yellow spots in the leaves, or are the leaves dropping off?
They're not dropping off. They're perfectly fine. They're just all covered in this yellow spot.
Yeah, you should still, if you had flowers and they pollinated, you should still have some fruit. The disease that you're talking about is one of what we call the gymnosporangium rust, probably the most common one, and the one you're probably dealing with is something called cedar apple rust. And this is a fungal disease, It is what's called an alternating russ, which means it requires two different plants in order to complete its life cycle. So the plant that you need to target and try to get rid of are junipers, particularly if you have red cedar, which is a type of juniper, very, very susceptible to this disease. And what you tend to see on the juniper hosts are relatively large brownish galls, so swollen areas on the branches. They'll look like little tiny brown brains attached to the branch. And those will start to ooze this kind of gelatiny orange material in usually around our area about mid-May into early June. And it was a good year for it this year. And then that orange marmalade-y material produces spores that infect the leaves on the apple trees. And occasionally you will get infections on fruits, but it's not super common. But you'll see these very bright yellow dots or spots in the leaves, and they can get relatively large. But it's a, from my perspective, a relatively cosmetic disease. It usually doesn't cause a lot of significant damage. And like I said, if your flower is pollinated, I would expect you to still get some fruit. So if you really want to manage it, I usually oftentimes tell folks to try to learn to ignore it, because for the most part, it doesn't cause a lot of damage. But if you do want to kind of break the cycle and kind of get rid of the disease, you need to target the junipers and get rid of those. Because that's
right,
where the spores are coming from that are infecting your apples.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Steve in Belleville, let's go to you now. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
We're building a new house. It's on top of a hill called on Panorama Road, and it is windy as can be. What is a really good windbreak tree that's disease resistant?
Oh, gosh. I'm the wrong person to ask for recommendations on disease resistant trees, because you find me a tree, I'll tell you the disease that will take it out. That's a hazard of my job. I only, unfortunately, tend to see things that have really, really severe problems. One tree you might consider if you've got a lot of space, but you should not put them super close together, would be Norway spruce. Of the spruces, I mentioned problems with this rhizosphere needle cast disease earlier in the show. Norway doesn't seem to have real problems with that, and that's probably the biggest disease issue I see on spruce trees. So if you can plant those far enough apart so you don't have a ton of overlap of branches, I know you want a windbreak, but if you can kind of space them so you don't get a lot of overlap of the branches, I don't think you'll have a lot of disease problems with that particular tree. That's the tree that comes to mind initially.
There you go, Steve. Thanks for calling. Well, Stephen in Spring Green, we'll go to you now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My original question was about the rust spots on my new apple trees that I just planted this year.
Rough spots on the bark?
No, on the leaves that you just, I think two callers ago.
The yellow spots?
And my hickory, I have a lot of hickory trees, and they have those little knobby things on them, and I'm cutting them all out, but I'm wondering if that's the same disease. But I
no,
guess
actually,
the,
if you're seeing kind of galls or growths on the leaves or on the petioles of hickory leaves, it's probably an insect gall of some kind. Like there's one, is a pouch gall. I'm not an insect expert, but that comes to mind. But there are a variety of insects that will lay their eggs on plant leaves and then induces the formation of a gall or a mass of tissue. And I know there's one on hickory that's pretty common. Those are very cosmetic. You don't need to cut those out. They're very sporadic in terms of when they will occur. They may not occur every year. So that's something you have much better things to worry about than those galls on hickories.
I guess I have a question then. It's very windy, and the three apple trees that I bought are a dual variety. They're like a braided trunk.
Okay.
And I have a lot of wind, and I'm worried that these things...
Oops, you broke it up.
They're not going to gain strength because I've got them straight.
Say that again. You broke up for a second.
It's very windy, and they have a braided trunk because it's two varieties in one.
Okay.
And I have them staked to keep them up against the wind, but the instructions say not to stake them because they won't get strong. So I guess what should I do?
Yeah, I was just listening to Laura Joel. She's our woody ornamental specialist over in the Department of Horticulture. We did a couple of talks on Wednesday, and she was talking about planting, and her recommendation is really only to stake for the first year. So, again, you do need to allow them to kind of acclimate to the environment where they're growing.
Makes them stronger if they can kind of fight against
it. Fight against that wind, yeah.
Steve, there you go. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Bill in Chautauqua. On to you now. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Father's Day weekend to you both.
Yeah, to you too.
You too.
Thank you. The problem I'm having is about 11 years ago, I planted a red maple tree, and it was doing great until the winter of 2018-2019. I think we got some damage that winter. Last year, I had half of the branches stayed bare.
Okay.
And I didn't do any trimming or pruning. Again, this year, it's the same problem.
Okay.
I was hoping it might have gone away, but...
Yeah, so are you seeing any progression? Is any more of the tree dying back, or is it just that half that died the winter before?
No, it's about the same amount.
Okay. Yeah, my guess is it's probably winter injury. We had that polar vortex that came through at the end of January of 2019, and that was absolutely horrible on a wide range of different types of trees and shrubs. So it probably suffered from some cold injury at that point, and you're just seeing the result of that. If that those sets of branches that haven't leafed out, they're probably totally dead. And so they should be removed. And then you need to make an assessment about whether or not that tree has any aesthetic value in your landscape anymore, because perhaps a better option is to remove the tree and plant a new one.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have a tree that really won't necessarily look very good. There may be some other structural damage to that tree as well, which might make it more prone to blow over in a high wind. So you have to keep all of these things in mind as you're looking at that tree.
There you go, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Back to our emails for a bit. Bob emailed a photo of his pole beans. The lower leaves have turned a rusty yellow color.
Yeah, I was commenting to Jill, who sent me the photo, that I think Bob sent me those photos directly, just haven't gotten to his email yet. I think what's going on, because it's primarily lower leaves and they're kind of yellow, there's a little bit of browning on them as well, but it's all kind of intervenal damage. I'm kind of suspicious that it's probably fertility related. And quite frankly, those are the lower leaves on the plants, so eventually they're going to kind of naturally age and probably drop off anyway. You might be able to get them to hold on a little bit longer by upping fertilization a little bit, but that's kind of part of the normal thing that happens with plants that are indeterminate, like pole beans. They're going to take a lot of the nutrients from the older leaves and move it towards the growing point to produce new leaves. So I'm not terribly concerned about that. Might fertilize a little bit more. You need to make sure you don't over-fertilize, though, particularly with nitrogen, because sometimes that'll stimulate a lot of leaf production at the expense of producing flowers that will eventually lead to the green beans that you really want.
Let's take another call. Maggie in Kenosha, your turn now. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. I have a question related to some of the earlier things you were talking about. You were discussing planting trees too deep. And I bought and planted two apple trees maybe at least 4 weeks ago. It might have been more like five.
Okay.
And now I think I probably planted them too deep. So I'm wondering if I should dig them up and plant them more shallow, or with this hot weather, I should just leave them and hope that they're okay.
No, I would be inclined to go ahead and dig those up. You haven't had them in the ground that long. I would go ahead and pull them up and then check. First thing I would evaluate to see whether you can really see that root flare. You have to be a little bit careful with apple trees because they're typically grafted. So there'll be a top of the tree that's grafted onto a different root system. And sometimes you'll see that root graft area, and you think that's the root flare, and it really isn't. That'll be above the root flare. So you need to look down and look to see where the roots are actually starting to form, and it's that kind of interface between the trunk and the roots that you want to kind of right at the soil line. And you may have to remove some of the soil in order to see that. But I would be inclined to do that. You just want to make sure that you're watering the tree really well. I would get a soaker hose or a drip hose and place that out near the edge of where the roots, it was a bald and burlap sort of tree, kind of the edge of the root ball. And again, you want about 2 inches of water per week. And I would do that all the way into the fall until the tree starts to turn its normal fall color. And then you'll probably want to give it that much water for probably another couple of years thereafter, because it takes a while for the trees to get established, and you want to make sure they're getting plenty of water.
Yeah, for sure. Maggie, thanks for calling. Good luck. Elaine in, or Ellen in Waupun, I'm sorry.
Hi, Larry and guests. Thank you for taking my call. I have a black lace dambucus, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, elderberry.
Mm-hmm.
And it has some cankers on it, these red, shiny areas on the twig. What would you suggest?
Are they swollen?
A few of them are.
Yeah, I suspect what you're dealing with is a disease called elderberry rust. I've been seeing tons and tons of photos. In fact, Jill sent me a photo of another example of this, and I've been seeing a lot of photos in the clinic. There's a fungal disease. It's another rust. We talked about rusts on apples. This is another similar related sort of fungus. And it's also an alternating rust. So it's a fungus that spends part of its life on sambucus or elderberry, and then part of its life on sedges, which are grass-like plants that typically grow in a little bit wetter areas. And the spores that are infecting your sambucus, your elderberry, are coming from the sedges. And what's – I'm sorry. I'm a plant pathologist, so I think this disease is super cool. What's really, really cool about this disease is that when the fungus infects, it induces formation of a gall, so the stems will swell up. And eventually, if you look very carefully at those swollen areas, you will see kind of round spots, and that's where the spores are produced that will eventually reinfect the sedges. And depends on what variety of sambucus you're dealing with. On the red foliage varieties, I tend to see it's a little bit more subtle. You get the swelling. You don't see the sporulation quite as well. But on the more green foliage varieties, those galls, those swollen areas, they will just ooze spores. They'll be incredibly bright yellow and powdery. And quite frankly, it'll look like a great big banana slug that's attached to the branch. It's a very cool disease. It's really cosmetic on sambucus. If you want to cut them out, go ahead and do that. I would cut down about 4 inches below where you see that swollen area. But quite frankly, you really don't need to worry about it. What you really need to do is search out the sedges in your area and get rid of those if you can find them, but that may be very, very difficult to do.
Yeah. I see the email Becky sent with the photo that describes it, I think, pretty well.
Yeah, looks like a huge banana slug that's attached to the branch. Yeah, it is like the coolest rust disease that I see. And I actually had somebody contact me by Facebook last night. She had brought in a sample of this a couple of years ago, and I'd gone all gaga about it because I was teaching a class, and I loved it as a demo for my students. And she had contacted me to let me know she had it again, and did I want to sample her to bring in a sample for me for my class. And fortunately, I'm not teaching the class this year. But it was really, really nice. Folks are quite nice about putting up with my eccentricities about plant diseases.
Elaine, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sherry in Wilton, your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Yes, good morning. We lost a cedar tree in a recent storm, so we just had the stump ground out, and we'd like to plant a new tree in that spot. So I have two questions. Would there be any problem planting a maple tree where the cedar trunk was ground out? And secondly, could you recommend a disease-resistant maple tree?
Yeah, I don't know of any that are technically disease-resistant, but maples are relatively sturdy. I don't see any real reason that you couldn't plant in the vicinity of where you had that other tree. You may not be able to, depending upon how well you ground out that stump. If there's a lot of root tissue still there, it might be difficult to replant exactly in the same area, so you may want to offset it just so you can get the new tree in a better situation where the roots can grow more vigorously. But the main things that I see on Maple trees are anthracnose. That's the leaf disease that we talked about earlier. That's pretty cosmetic. You're going to see probably some of that every year. The other big disease that I see on maples that, again, is very cosmetic is something called tar spot. So you get these big, tarry spots. They're kind of raised if it's on a native maple, and they look like somebody left a fingerprint in the middle of this big, tarry area. They're very dramatic, but they're very cosmetic. Definitely, I would not buy a Norway maple. Those are considered invasive, so I would go for probably a sugar or one of our native maples. And the other real disease that you need to worry about on maples, there is a fungal disease called verticillium wilt. The fungus can be in the soil. It invades through the roots and then colonizes the water-conducting tissue inside the tree and blocks it off, and that will cause the tree to wilt, and that is a lethal disease. So you need to be aware that that's a potential issue you could have with a maple. But that wouldn't stop me. That wouldn't stop me from planting a maple. I love maples. I think they're beautiful trees.
I do as well. Sherry, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Jerry in South Milwaukee. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a 20-year-old spring snow flowering crabapple, and we're using a professional service to spray it three times a year for apple scab, and some years it's more serious than others. I wondered, in addition to the spraying, what I've taken up is I've got a electric blower vacuum, and I'm vacuuming under the tree before I mow, and I just wondered if there were any other things I could to minimize the effects of this apple scab.
Yeah, now that's the variety that's fruitless. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, that one's super susceptible to scab, unfortunately. This is a fungal disease. And I don't even think three applications a year would probably do that most years to get the leaves to stay on that tree. It's going to be very difficult. Cleaning up the leaf debris is very important. But unfortunately, with this particular disease, it produces tons of spores. So if you miss just a few leaves, there's plenty of fungal spores floating around in the spring to reinfect your tree. So with fungicide applications, timing is everything for this disease. You need to get the first application on right as the new leaves are coming out, and then it's about every 7 to 10 days thereafter, quite frankly. And if we have a really, really wet year, you're going to have to continue to do that throughout the entire summer. That's why if you're doing three applications, it might work in a drier year, but if we have a really wet year, it probably will not be sufficient. Now, the okay thing about the disease, it does defoliate the tree, so you have kind of an ugly-looking tree in the summertime, but usually those trees bloom pretty profusely, even though they've lost their leaves. So you get good show in the spring, it's just you don't have a great-looking tree in the summer. So how much does that bother you, I guess, is the question. And if it really bothers you, then you need to remove it and replace it with a different variety that's been bred for resistance.
All right. There you go, Jerry. Thank you so much for calling. Our guest today is Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at plant diseases on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller with my guest Brian Huddleston, director of the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you can email your photos and questions to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Melissa emailed us a photo of her sister's climbing rose. And the buds are drying up, so she's wondering what's happening. She also has serviceberry bushes with orangish spots on the leaves.
Yeah. Let's talk about the rose first. I see the photo of that, and I think there's probably some insect activity that's really the culprit on that particular one. So I think that's probably a question for PJ. Now, there is a disease that could affect rose buds, can affect a variety of flower buds as well. I see this as a problem on peonies, in particular in the bud stage. It's the fungus is called botrytis. The disease is called either botrytis blight or gray mold. And I do have a fact sheet, again, on my website about this. And that particular fungus is pretty wimpy, and it doesn't typically infect leaf tissue very well, although it will cause a spotting on peony leaves very late in the growing season. But it really likes to infect flowers. And if we have a wet spring, it can cause some issues with flower abortions. It's hard to deal with because that fungus is everywhere in the environment. There are some fungicide treatments you could use. I usually recommend thinning and better spacing of plants to kind of dry things out a little bit. That can sometimes help prevent that problem. But in this particular case, I think the issue is probably started out as an insect problem, something feeding on that bud. Now, in terms of the serviceberry, that's probably a variation on the cedar apple rust that we talked about earlier. That particular group of diseases does go to serviceberry as well. I don't see it really commonly on that host, but I have seen it on serviceberry in the past. So the same recommendations that I made before, look for those junipers and try to get rid of them. That's where the spores are coming from.
Let's take some more calls. Ed in Athelstan is up next. Hi, Ed. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I planted about 35 bare root trees this spring, different varieties. But the maples and the black cherries, some of them, the leaves are only coming out. They're about 2 or 3 foot whips. I don't know what you call them, but some of them, they're only producing leaves very close to the ground.
Okay.
Instead of at the top of the stem.
Yeah, that may mean that that top portion of the stem is dead, and they're just sprouting from lateral buds farther on, farther down. And that may or may not be okay. You know, it's probably not the best tree to keep around, quite frankly, because you may not get a good leader. If it happens to be grafted, the sprouts may be coming from the rootstock rather than from the part of the plant that was grafted on top, in which case you will get a tree that will look nothing like probably what you were expecting. I don't know if they graft maples or not, but the fruit trees, oftentimes they do.
Black cherry, I thought it was a hardwood tree, not a fruit tree, but I could be wrong.
Okay, it's an ornamental cherry rather than a fruiting cherry?
I thought it was one they'd produce cherry wood from down the road.
Oh, okay, yeah, then it would be what I would call an ornamental cherry rather than one that you're growing for fruit. And those then probably are not grafted. But again, the problem is, you know, you started out with a relatively small tree, which is exactly what I normally recommend to people. I think you're much better off. You're going to get better establishment if you start with small trees. But I just think in those particular cases, they just weren't great trees to begin with. So you'll probably be better off replacing them rather than trying to get them to limp along.
Yeah, there you go, Ed. Bad news, or sad news at least.
Sad news, yeah.
Lee in Delafield, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Good morning, guys. Brian, thank you for the great advice. I've got a quick question, a follow-up to the selection of a maple tree for a very sunny front yard. The sugar maple comes to mind for the beautiful color, but I also came across some hybrids, crossing sugars with silvers and other trees to get faster growth. What's the story? Is that a proven technology?
Yeah, there are a lot of those out. Autumn Blaze is one of the ones that's quite popular. But talking with Laura, I wish Laura were on with me because she'd have better information on this than I do. But I know there are some structural problems with certain of the varieties of those hybrids. So their crotch angles aren't particularly good, so they tend to have problems with branch breaking off. So I think you do need to be a little bit selective with those. What county are you located in?
In Waukesha County.
Waukesha County. I would give the county office there a call, and probably Kristen Kirkowski would be the person to talk with, or Ann Weed, and they could get you, dig up some additional information on exactly, if you want to get one of those hybrids, exactly which one to get, the ones that have better structure.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm getting old. I'm less patient than I was, so I want that tree to fill up my front yard as soon as possible.
Yeah, and again with any tree, proper, you know, in addition to proper planning, proper selection of the right tree to begin with is super critical, because if you select the wrong tree, it can be 5, 10, 15 years down the road, and then all of a sudden things go wrong. So you want to get the right tree, care of it properly.
All right. There you go, Lee. Thanks for calling. Jake in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I've got a great big bur oak tree in my backyard, and I was just wondering, I want to try and keep a good eye on it. It's a nice old tree. It's huge. But I was wondering, like, what are signs of oak wilt or some other common diseases on them big trees like that?
Yeah, with bur oak, we do see anthracnose, but again, that's cosmetic. You can see oak wilt on bur oak. And the big thing to prevent that is prevent any wounding of the tree during the growing season. So you don't want to do any pruning when the trees are physiologically active, when they're growing, producing leaves. I usually recommend for oaks to do winter pruning when it's nice and cold, because the oak wilt fungus is brought in by sap beetles, and they're attracted to wounds on trees, and they can visit a wounded oak tree. There's some research indicating within about 10 minutes. So if for some reason, let's say you have a storm come through and you have a branch that's broken off and you decide that you need to prune that off to clean it up, you should have a bucket of paint right next to you as you prune off that branch and prune over that wound. And it doesn't have to be any sort of special type of paint. I tell folks, if you have some leftover latex paint from painting your rooms in your house, you can use that. You just need a physical barrier on that cut surface to make it less attractive to the beetles. And then the other disease that you may read about, there's a disease called bur oak blight. It's in a way similar to anthracnose, but can cause maybe a little bit more significant damage. It's technically a leaf disease, but there's some evidence that the organism can move onto the branches, maybe cause a little bit of branch tip dieback. There have been some reports where there are claims that it can totally kill a bur oak, but I'm not quite sure those claims are actually supported by research. So if you have that disease, what you'll typically see is that your trees in the fall, instead of dropping all the leaves, you'll have leaves that remain on the tree. So you'll have a lot of browning of leaves in the summertime, and then the trees will not drop those leaves in the fall. And that's somewhat unfortunate, because remember I said one of the things you do to prevent some of these leaf diseases is clean up the leaf debris. And if those trees are attached to the branches, you can't do that. So that means that if we get a wet year, there are leaves up there generating spores that can reinfect the tree. Other than that, good fertility and watering. But the fertility, if you think you need fertilizer, you should always, for trees and shrubs, I recommend having a soil test done first just to make sure you actually do need to fertilize. I wouldn't just fertilize willy-nilly, because oftentimes trees don't need that much fertilizer, if any at all. So those would be the things. Good watering if we get into a drought period. Because the other thing I worry about with oaks is if they get stressed, they tend to attract two-line chestnut borer, which is an insect pest that can cause significant dieback and even death of oak trees.
Oh, so lots of things to consider there, Jake. Thank
I'm
you
just
so
a
much.
A mountain of optimism, aren't I? Sorry about that.
Oh, man.
I see too many things go wrong in my job, so I kind of want to cover all the bases if I can.
Oh, boy. Well, let's see what's on Steph's mind in Menasha. Hi, Steph.
Hi. I have a large old silver maple, and for the first time since I've lived in the area, 28 years, the leaves are turning black and dropping.
Okay. It's probably anthracnose. It's been a great year for that, and I think we really got set up for a lot of the disease this year because we've had a couple of wet seasons in 2018 and 2019, so there's just a lot of these anthracnose fungi roaming around in the environment. I'm not terribly concerned about that if you're just seeing kind of spotting and blotchy areas on the leaves. Trees are quite well adapted to having pretty high levels of this. I would just make sure when the leaves drop off the tree this fall, you're pretty careful about cleaning up the debris, getting it away from the tree. If you're a good composter, compost that material. If you heat it up to the proper temperature and constantly turn the pile, that's a great way of recycling those leaves. Even though they technically have disease, the heat and the decay of the tissue will eliminate the pathogen. But silver maples
needs to be pretty hot.
Yeah, about 140 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. Don't do what I do. I have just a pile of stuff in the back corner of my yard. That's technically what's called an inoculum generating pile, so it produces lots of spores to reinfect my plants next year. But I like that because I need samples for teaching. So.
Okay. Thank you, Steph. Lorette in Sun Prairie. Hi.
I've got a hibiscus that I brought in last fall. And we had done it the year before. It's quite big. And we had transplanted it before we brought it in into a bigger pot. It took the winter very beautifully in the house. Got it outside about the middle of May. The last week, the bigger leaves on the top start getting very yellow, and now they're dropping off like half of the bushy is what's left.
It may be a fertility issue that you're dealing with. For that, I think I would call Lisa Johnson at Dane County Extension. She's the local horticulture expert for you here in Dane County. So check for her in the phone book, and I would give her a call for some recommendations on fertilizing.
Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and pleased to have back Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Always great to have Dr. Death stop by to talk about all those plant diseases we have out there and kind of how to control them. So, question, give a call, 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call from Nick in Brookfield next. Hi, Nick.
Hi there. I have an apple tree that's been in the ground for about 5 years, and at the graft union, the lower half of the graft is swollen to almost the size of a tennis ball, but everything else is fine, and I'm wondering, is that a concern?
Are you getting apples? And
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Seems to be leaf size seems to be good.
Yes.
Okay, color is good. No other indications of other symptoms?
Correct. It's a freedom variety, produces nice apples. I mean, it's a baby tree, so it's not very productive, but I just watch this thing getting bigger and bigger and wondering, is there something going wrong?
Yeah, is it very symmetric and smooth, or is it kind of lumpy and
very symmetric. Irregular?
Very symmetric, okay. The only thing I can think of, the reason I was asking whether it was bumpy or not, there is a bacterial disease that might infect around that area called crown gall, but that usually is lumpier. If it's nice and smooth, it's just something that's going on with that at that graft union. You may eventually have problems with the graft union failing. I don't know for certain what's going on with this particular in this particular situation. But that's a little bit disturbing that it's doing that. So
yeah.
I would enjoy it as you have it for now and just kind of watch it. And eventually the tree may have other issues. But at this point, I can't provide much more guidance than that.
There you go, Nick.
Thank you.
Yeah, you had a peach tree question?
Yes, I have a... bare root peach tree that's been in the ground for 3 weeks and is showing no signs of breaking dormancy.
Okay.
Any secrets on how to wake that baby up?
No, I would just continue to make sure it's getting plenty of water, and you know there is always the possibility that it's just not going to leaf out, but I would give it some time and just see what it does.
Yep, there you go, Nick. Thank you for calling. Wait and see.
Yeah.
Diane in Elroy, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I've got a new problem. Thank you for taking my call. It started about a week or so ago on my squash, my summer squash leaves.
Okay.
Kind of a creamy buff spots all over, and it's starting to spread to several other species, kale and spinach and even my basil and Brussels sprouts.
Now, is it just a does it look like a growth on the surface of the plant?
No, it looks like a hole almost, and you turn it over, it's just like it's shriveling up inside. It isn't getting, you know, thick like a...
Yeah, and how big are these areas?
Oh, well, like about the size of a ballpoint pen, maybe two dots.
Okay, so they're relatively small.
Yes.
Yeah, it could be some insect feeding of some kind. This would be another situation where I would get in contact with PJ Leash. There, we have been seeing a lot of, I think it's, he mentioned flea beetle feeding, which will cause very, very small holes in the leaves. And the fact that you're seeing it on so many different types of plants is suggested to me that it's probably not a disease problem. It's certainly not, if it is disease, it's not the same disease on every plant that you're dealing with. But I'm wondering if you have some insects that are out and about feeding on the leaves of your vegetables. Do you have an option for taking digital photos?
Yes.
Yeah, that would be something where I would take some pictures and then email those to PJ.
At the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab.
Yeah. So if you do a search online for UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, that will pop up his website, and his contact information is on there.
All right.
Okay, thank you. If they aren't really whole,
There is also an insect called four-line plant bug, which will it will feed, and it leaves, it's almost like making little tiny windows in the leaves. So there'll be tissue in the center, but it'll be very almost transparent. If you hold those up to the light, it'll actually transmit a lot of light through those areas where the feeding has occurred. But I really think in this particular situation, definitely photographs would be very, very useful to see what's going on.
There you go, Diane. Thank you so much for calling. Lori in Shawano, it's your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hello. I have or had three pine trees. They're out by the road, probably maybe 20 to 30 feet from the road, but set up about 6 to 8 feet. And I had to have two of the three taken out because the middle one died off, which I think may have been a blue spruce, Colorado blue spruce, and I guess they don't like our humidity, so that may have been a fungus or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, it started dying off last year. I noticed that there was about 8 to 10 feet of the top of this tree that was just orange, and then once spring got here and it started warming up, almost the whole tree died off to about maybe 3 feet, maybe just a few branches on the bottom. And I still have a big, beautiful Norway spruce, and I've got other spruces in the yard. That one, thankfully, hasn't been affected because I just love them trees. And would you know what that would be? Because I heard something about like a weevil that would do that, but I didn't see any bugs, but I wasn't looking either.
Yeah, it really kind of depends on exactly what kind of conifer you're talking about. I've seen that sort of top dieback. I had some photographs that came in on some spruce trees. That's also a typical dieback pattern that I will see with firs. And with firs, I worry a lot about how much water they're getting. They tend to be very finicky about water. So if you drought stress them, don't give them enough water, they tend to die from the top down, the way you're describing. If they get overwatered, they tend to be pretty prone to root rot. So there are actually organisms in the soil that degrade the root system, and then that interferes with water uptake. So again, they get brown at the top and die from the top down. That's a possibility. There could be insect activity in the tree. What I would look at would be at that interface on the trunk. Look at that interface area between where there's live branches and dead branches for any indication of sap production, any indication of holes. If there is sap, look to see whether it looks like there might be sawdust mixed in with the sap. If you see that or see holes, that could be some indication of insect activity. There are certain fungi that could infect the main trunks and girdle it, and that would cause anything from that point up to die. It really is, it's hard to tell exactly what might be going on in your particular situation.
There you go, Lori. Thanks for calling. As long as we're talking about pines, Claude Dean emailed a photo of her 10-year-old white pine, wondering if you could tell what's wrong with it and what she should do about it.
Unfortunately, from those photographs, I can't tell. I can't see enough to tell exactly what might be going on. My suggestion would be, let me give out my email address, and if she can take some additional photos closer up to the branches into that area where there's the problem, might be able to get a better sense of what's going on. My email is P as in Paul, D as in David, D as in David again, C as in Charles, at WISC, short for Wisconsin, .edu. And just take some additional photos and email those to me. I'll take a look. Sometimes it's a little hard from photos to tell exactly what's going on. My concern, because it's a white pine, is that it might be white pine blister rust, but I'm not seeing exactly what I need to see to make that sort of diagnosis. And that's a very serious disease. It's another rust disease. It's another alternating rust. And that's a fungus that spends part of its life cycle on white pines, part of its life cycle on gooseberries and currants. So if you have any gooseberries or currants growing nearby, that's a distinct possibility that that could be the problem. Management, though, is just to get rid of the gooseberries and currants.
And again, it's PDDC at WISC.edu.
That's correct.
Let's take another call. Jim in Stone Lake, your turn now. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there? Maybe we lost Jim. Let's try Mary in Milwaukee. Mary, hello?
Hello.
Mary, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a 3-year-old peach tree. It's a Madison variety, hardy for the north. It's been well cared for. It has a root of fungus of some sort. There's an orangey, sticky sap that's at the root line, I mean at the soil level line and extending down to the root. And I scooped the soil away and I sort of got the sticky stuff off. And I looked it up. It was something called in this book I looked at, Phytophthora, root and collar rot. I don't know if that is. It sounds rather dire.
Yeah, if you are dealing with that disease, you probably should replace the tree. But let's go back. You said you've got a lot of sticky material?
Yes.
Kind of like blobs of sap that are being produced?
Not blobs, just kind of it rings the tree about halfway around the circumference, and it's just okay. This sticky.
Yeah, it could still be sap that's being produced. There's another kind of very common disease that I've been seeing this year, and it goes to any of the stone fruits, so that's peaches, plums, and cherries. It's called bacterial canker, and we do have a fact sheet about that on my website as well. And it usually, when you get this disease, you get production of sap on the surface of the trunk. And oftentimes it's in little blobs, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. And the thing about peaches is, even though technically you may have a variety that's rated as being hardy, we're not a great climate for growing peaches. And so they do tend to be prone to a lot of winter injury, and that can allow this bacterial canker organism to get inside the tree. And unfortunately, if you've got damage in the main trunk, whether it's the Phytophthora or this bacterial disease, that does not bode well for your tree. So there's not going to be much. It sounds like the damage is fairly extensive, so there's really not much you're going to be able to do, particularly if it's the bacterial disease, other than enjoy the tree as long as it's producing fruit for you.
Yeah.
And
there
then consider replacement. And again, I love peaches, don't get me wrong. I love eating peaches, but it's not a tree that I recommend for folks here in Wisconsin. It's just our winters are just too harsh for even the technically hardy varieties.
There you go, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. You could join in, too, 800-642-1234, the number to call. Gary in Rhinelander emailed that something is killing all the tamarack trees in his area, and he's wondering if it's a disease or possibly an insect.
Uncertain on that one. That would be another one where I would suggest getting photos of the trees, both kind of landscape shots and some close-up of the trunk, the needles, any part of the tree that's dying off, and get those in, because I don't see a lot of tamarack that comes into my lab, and I can't think of anything particularly dire from a disease standpoint that I would worry about on that particular tree. But some photographs would be helpful to try to get down to the bottom of what's going on with those trees.
Nicole emailed that she has a very healthy, large ash tree in her front yard, and she's been treating for the past 4 years for emerald ash borer.
Mm-hmm.
Should she continue to treat this tree, or should she cut it down and replace it? It's a large one.
If it's doing well and it's aesthetically pleasing and she likes the tree and can afford to do the treatments, I think I would be inclined to continue to treat the tree. This is really kind of a personal decision. If it's overly costly and she'd rather put that money into a replacement tree, I would suggest, then planting a new one, maybe continue to treat the ash for a while to allow the new tree to get to a reasonable size and then think about removing it. Again,
yeah.
There's a lot of cost involved in removing a tree as well.
Yes, there is. And the treatments vary on that. If I'm not mistaken, I think you can do some treatments that will last at least 2 years.
Yes, a lot of the treatments, from what I understand, will last a couple of years. And again, we do have some fact sheets on that. There's a sheet of insecticide treatments for homeowners for treating for emerald ash borer. We also have one called Is Your Tree Worth Treating for Emerald Ash Borer, which you kind of go through and it gives some characteristics of trees where it would probably be a really good idea to treat it, and then talks about characteristics of trees where it's probably better not to treat for that insect.
Yeah. Joe in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a couple maple trees that I had transplanted. They were about 16 foot tall. I bought them from a guy, and he brought them in, planted them, and they did really well. And now I'm starting to notice the bark on the tree is kind of splitting and opening up.
Okay.
Which concerns me. And then also on the one, so they're on opposite sides of the yard, which is a pretty big yard. But the one tree on the leaves, it's got a bunch of little red, like pinhead size growths on it. They're like a bright red.
Okay. What was the second thing? I'm sorry. You said splits in the trunk and then little red.
They look like little dots, but they're actually growths,
On the leaves,
Yeah, on the leaves. I can actually pick them off of there.
Those are insect galls, so I wouldn't worry too much about those. And those are cosmetic. The split may be a result of transplanting. Those trees are very, very large when you transplanted them. And so they were probably under a ton when they were planted. You're probably seeing what are called frost cracks. And are they happen to be on the south side of the tree by any chance?
More the west side.
Okay.
More the west side.
Any side of the tree, they're a little bit more common on the south side of the tree. Excuse me for a second. My phone handset is running out of juice. I've got to change phones real quick.
Okay.
I'll continue to talk. But what happens when the trees are under stress, in the sometimes the bark will in cycles, and that will induce some stress in the bark. And a lot of trees will live with those for an extended period of time. Let me change phones here real quick. Alrighty, there we go. And turn that one off. But sometimes what can happen with these cracks, you can get fungi that will get in through those cracks. They're wood rot organisms. So I would really take a look at those trees very carefully to see if you see any indication of decay underneath that loose bark. And if you do, then you have to worry about them being structurally unsound. And again, what that really means is that the trunk will get weak. If you get a big storm that comes in, then potentially the tree can blow over more readily. So there's not much you can do about those. They're stress-related. If we see these on, you know, big trees that are transplanted, we also see them on other trees, particularly maples. If they're planted too deeply, sometimes maples will get girdling roots, again, roots that grow around the trunk and kind of strangle the tree, and that can induce enough stress to lead to formation of these cracks as well. And again, there's just not much you can do about those other than, I would say, good watering of the tree, making sure the tree doesn't go under additional stress. So if it gets dry, water the tree.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Jeff in Eau Claire emailed one. I don't know if you could help with this one, Brian. I may have some thoughts. He planted his potatoes in straw bales.
Okay.
Bale preparation went well. They smelled just right. It's been about almost 4 weeks, and he has seen no growth yet. What might have failed, and should he try again at this point?
Yeah, what I would do would be dig down where he put those potato pieces and see whether they rotted. If the material was really, really wet for a while, potatoes are susceptible to something called bacterial soft rot, and the seed pieces will just decay away, and that may be what happened in this particular case. So
yeah,
I would
maybe
check. If he had problems, though, I probably wouldn't replant potatoes in there because you've got a lot of the bacteria still hanging around in there. And if you plant new pieces, they'll likely rot as well.
Yeah, I think he may be it's perfect advice. I think go in there and dig down in there and take a look and see if things are rotted. And if they are rotted, you could still plant something else in there.
Yes. Although some of the other vegetables, you have to be a little bit careful. Cabbage can get soft rot as well. You want to keep things on the dry side, a little on the drier side, just to kind of keep those bacteria from being really active.
Yeah, for sure. Well, how are things going at the lab? I heard at the start of the show you said you're in there for a little while, but you can't be in there all the time.
Yeah, we're very limited in terms of the number of hours, so we're limited in terms of the number of samples that we can take. But as an alternative, we have set up on our website, there's a form that you can fill out and then drop in photographs. And we are doing a lot of digital diagnostics, and I am tracking all of this. And ironically, even though we're not open for real samples, our sample numbers as of yesterday was up 57% over this time last year. And I have a lot of photographs that Jill has sent me from the program, so I'll be emailing folks about those. And all I ask is please be patient. We're getting kind of overloaded right now with things. I'm trying to get back the same day, but that may not be possible as we get farther into the summer.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I really appreciate that.
Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He'll be back, and we'll talk with him again. Doesn't he do a great job? Boy. Coming up on Monday, we'll talk about the art and science of finding and losing your way. And then at 11:45, we'll take a look at geocaching. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk.